Welcome to the In the Limelight podcast. I'm your host, Clarissa Burt, and every week I bring you great information from fabulous people that I get to meet all over the world. I interview public figures, influencers, entrepreneurs, thought leaders, millionaires, and moguls that share their know-how, tipping points, pivotal moments, and life lessons. I promise you educative, empowering, and entertaining conversations with entrepreneurs that have a social conscience. Don't forget to find me on social. You can find me pretty much everywhere. Facebook, it's Clarissa Burt Official. Also, sign up for my newsletter at clarissaburt.com. That way you can keep abreast of the In the Limelight media as it's coming out. And you'll be getting my weekly newsletter along with the In the Limelight magazine every quarter. Check out inthelimelightmedia.com. Hey everybody, it's Clarissa here. We are back in the limelight yet again with another extraordinary woman entrepreneur. But before we bring her onto the show, I do want to remind you that you can see this video on Chromecast, Roku, Apple TV, Amazon Fire, Pluto, Zumo, Sony, Daily Motion. We're kind of starting to get all over the place. Very excited about moving on to the OTT platforms. And the podcast can be heard on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, and Podbean, the magazine. You can get over to clarissaburt.com and take a look at the our digital magazine, which is In the Limelight with Clarissa, intelligent media for the savvy entrepreneur with Mr. Pagani, my good friend, out of Italy, who's a supercar maker and a hypercar maker. And I think the whole magazine is just really, really a beautiful publication. So if anybody out there wants to contribute, send in an article, you can do that. You can find out how by getting to me at clarissa@clarissaburt.com. I think that was everything. Oh, and I do want to remind you also, we've got a really cool new partnership happening here with mynewsdesk.com. So mynewsdesk.com is something that I started using recently, and it's drastically changing my business. You can access thousands upon thousands of journalists all over the world. And then you put out PR releases, news releases. You can get your story covered because you're getting with the right people in the right genres. There are, again, you monitor billions of sources and on any subject matter, and you can even sort of check in on what your competition is doing. Very interesting. So again, mynewsdesk.com, thrilled to have them with us. I am on the phone frequently with Zuber from Sweden, from My News Desk. Lots of, and they've got great support, by the way, great support. So if you really want to bump up your business and get it out there, this is where you'd need to be. Let's bring her on, shall we? I'm very excited and to have Shireen Honest with us from Representation Counts. Yes, it does. And I want to talk very in depth because this is a sensitive subject. Usually when I come on, you know that I'm sort of, we keep it fun and frolicky and very light. I'd like to keep this as serious in nature as the problem itself, Shireen. When we are talking about racism, we're talking about equality, and we're talking about the things that you so passionately believe in and that you are working with. I've looked at your website again, everybody, and I'm going to put the banner up so everybody can take a look underneath there and follow along with us. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And I
thanks
would
so much for having me.
You know, you're so welcome. You're really, really welcome. You know, we hear a lot about diversity, inclusion, and racism, and the words, I think, for a lot of people mean something, but not quite as in depth as someone as you who openly says, I've been a victim of this. I know what I'm talking about. Can you walk us down that path a minute?
Yeah, sure. So as many of us know right now, especially in 2020, there was just such a pivotal moment in our history where finally racism has been recognized at the magnitude at which it finally has been. So what I mean by that is people before it was like, okay, racism exists, but like not right now, not here. It's impossible. It was very much brushed under the rug. But now we're in a position where we are identifying and acknowledging what history and also modern day has done to people from minority, underrepresented and colored backgrounds or the LGBTQ community. And what I think now we're transitioning into is far from acknowledgement alone to now authentic representation, where in fact people are not being tokenized and performative allyship is kind of being like not the main way of people recognizing that people are in fact being impacted by systemic racism and such, that now we're looking for authentic representation to lead the way to kind of eradicate a lot of these systemic racist issues.
Right. So what is it that, you know, I'm taking down the path a little bit. So you decided then to start something, representationcounts.com, your business. And again, it's diversity, it's equality, it's inclusion, as you've spoken about before. And you work with large companies, you work with small companies, royal trusts, you work with politicians, yeah, people of influence, tech companies, banks. I mean, you're all straight across the board helping companies understand what is right, what is wrong. Well, for example, if a company is called out on any one of these issues, what is the right thing for them to do? And what's kind of like not the thing for them to do at all?
Yeah, so I think that a lot of the times what happens is large organizations, they like to step into, oh, we will do better. That is immediately their first formal acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. And I think that really upsets people who are from underrepresented communities, because immediately they're giving themselves forgiveness for something that actually is so grave in some circumstances. Like, these are people's livelihoods. Like, people mm-hmm. are impacted in so many profound ways that you can't just automatically forgive yourself and say, okay, we're going to do better. And that, you know, like, we have never had racism in our organization, but we acknowledge that, you know what, in this one situation, there might have been racism, and we're just going to do better. And we acknowledge that Black Lives Matter. We acknowledge that people of color matter. I think that they have to take a step beyond that and say, you know what, like, we absolutely did do wrong, acknowledge what has happened, accept the consequence of that. And what I mean is that, like, allow people to kind of just share their dissatisfaction or their unsettlement with you. Like, don't just be like, okay, that's it. This is business. We're just going to like identify the problem that this is a problem. And you know what, let's just pull a PR stunt and like pretend like right. performative allyship, right? Like that, right. you know, we do care. There needs to be a lot of action oriented behavior that comes from people at top levels and also throughout the organization to be like, we're taking this seriously.
So what you're saying is, yes, we know it happened. We're really sorry it happened. It won't happen again. And then the yeah. buck stops there, as opposed to, and here's what we're going to do about it.
Yeah, there should be immediate change right away. Like, if it means getting rid of some people, then you kind of have to do that, because automatically, like, people are just rejecting it, right? Like, what you have in place, like, right now, what we see with a lot of organizations is that they're not making the choice to change. They've been forced to change. There's a difference. If you make a choice, you're electing that, like, okay, we identified the problem. We're being proactive about the situation. And genuinely, our morals, values, and compass, our principles of our organization or company dictate that, you know what, there needs to be change. But that hasn't been the case. A lot of people, a lot of organizations, what they did was see that, you know, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, all these situations were happening, mass riots or mass protests, especially in May, all around the world, these things were happening, and they kind of took it as an opportunity to kind of use it for media attention, right? Instead, what, like, it was a forced action that, like, people who are consumers were demanding that, look, this is the problem. We're officially at our wits' end. We want change. And it was something that had to be done. It wasn't a choice that a lot of organizations made, that, like, when this wasn't a big issue, nobody was really talking about it. In fact, if you went to your boss at, like, maybe a year ago, it was, you would probably lose your job or be very close to it. Like, your work life would probably get a lot more complicated and difficult. Now yeah. it's like, okay, now they're trying to take action because they're being forced to take action, right? Because there's so okay. much scrutiny over it, and there's so much accountability because everybody is standing up and talking about it.
So that was my next question. In your estimation, their action is being taken, and a lot of yeah. that had to do with, you know, sort of the wake-up call in May of 2020.
Exactly. I think that was the trigger point internationally, very much so, like, that it was the growing epidemic that snowballed over to a pandemic as well alongside COVID. And now it's something like the virus you could compare it to, that, like, it just kind of spread like wildfire, and people had to kind of acknowledge it and have accountability for it. Mm-hmm. Whereas usually it wasn't this big of a deal.
Right. Okay, so how do we eradicate racism? What's the best way to approach it?
I really think, like, this is obviously everybody's question. The best thing is to acknowledge that, you know, previously we like to go towards statistics and data, right? And those are some of the most inhumane ways. Like, usually to humanize the data behind it, you have to acknowledge people's stories or understand people's stories, right? Because data is so like very set in stone on what they're looking for to kind of represent what the story will be. And everybody doesn't have the
data. You never know even there if what you're
exactly
really getting. It's like a box of chocolates. You never know.
Yeah, exactly. It's so open for interpretation that when it comes to human life and human rights, it's not going to define a lot of the problems. And also the people who take on that data are generally biased. No human on this planet, I can tell you for a fact, and we all know this, is perfect in their bias or lack of. And so the people who usually get to data collection positions are people from privileged backgrounds. Like, either you got an education or like there's some sort of leg up that you have. Like, you're not going to find a kid from Bronx collecting data for the prime minister or president, right? Like, it's just not going to happen. So what that goes to tell you is that the data that the top leaders are relying on to make very important decisions probably doesn't have at the table what 90% of the population is going through. And so what I would like to say is that the best way to solve it is to really have an open ear and understand that, like, or leave a door open and authentically for people to share their stories in a way where, sometimes I like to say, like, compensate people for their stories, right? Because you don't want, like, that's also free labor at the end of the day. You've hired really top-notch consultants to try to come up with solutions for things like racism. And if they can't come up with it, why not, like, open the door up for people who actually represent those communities and backgrounds and acknowledge them, but also compensate them in some way? That's authentic representation, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're kind of decentralizing power from just a select few of people that obviously come from privileged backgrounds, and allowing more people to come to the conversation at the table to facilitate better change and create better solutions for everyone.
I know that you're a huge proponent of education. What do you mean by that? How does your work tie into the educative process?
Yeah, so actually, Representation Counts, I started it just because my own story. I was impacted with racism, and I actually was in technology education prior to this business. It was a full-on company. Unfortunately, I had a defamation lawsuit that was targeted by my competitors to kind of put me out of business. And so what I was working on and what this company is kind of bootstrapping into that is, you know, education is the most powerful thing. It doesn't have to come from a school. Knowledge is power, right? So what I think that education plays a role in all of this is that, like, because everybody has different experiences, they can educate people in different ways and should be allowed, or there should be a process or way to be able to let people from all walks of life share their experience. And that in its form is like education, right? Or like changing people's perspectives, or like helping people from underrepresented backgrounds to be able to share their story in a way that could empower through an educated way to make change and create solutions for people from all walks of life.
Do you think they're doing enough educating in schools about racism?
No, I'm actually very anti-school for that reason. I think, you know, school has been operating on a very archaic model for a very long time. I think that they really like to just set a standard and box and kind of just really stay narrow-minded on being able to accomplish whatever that box is. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, a lot of people fall through the cracks, and those people could be actually contributing something very meaningful and powerful for bigger, better innovations, bigger, better inclusion, all these other wonderful things, but they're being excluded because they cannot do the process the way the school has set out, right? And so I think that that is another, like, right now we saw racism. Next, I think education is going to be disrupted. We're seeing currency being disrupted with Bitcoin, financial institutions, all that. I think, you know, education is going to be like the anti-school revolution is kind of stirring up. I think for that reason is because so many people have been left out of a very high quality education, and, you know, schools are operating like for-profit businesses. They really have no objective to care about every student. There's no incentive there. And so I think that that's going to be disrupted next.
So if we're going to be going probably more online for education, how is it that we're going to be interacting with one another and socializing with one another so that we can eradicate and work toward the eradication of racism?
So I think there needs to be a hybrid model that exists. So for example, right now in universities, college, apprenticeships, and various other vocational learning opportunities, we still as humans need in-person facilitation of learning. Oh, it's important. I do not like online learning at all. I'm probably very tech savvy. I hate it. I honestly do. And I know so many people who hate it. Like, you could be living in Silicon Valley, the offspring or the person who invented
Absolutely.
something massive and not be well on. Like, it's just not reflective of a
And
person.
even
So,
I'll interject just a minute here and say, how many people are having like relationships by text?
They're not.
You know,
They're
another
ruining
thing is that let's walk
relationships.
down the aisle, but let's stay home and do it virtually. I don't know, I don't know where we're going with it. I guess is what I'm saying, and I find it to be disheartening at best.
No, and I think, being a 90s kid, I definitely feel like we still were, like, I grew up in the transition phase, where like high tech was just coming in at a mass level. But I also enjoyed being out in the playground all day and playing sports and doing very hands-on things, right? And I can tell you that, like, I really think that it's going to be like an elastic band. Things are going to come back. Like, I'm sure COVID has really pushed people to be at home and online and digital and all that. But I really think for the future of learning and future of education, and this is where representation does count, is that, it's going to be a hybrid model in which at scale, like how universities have a culture and a brand, there'll be maybe private corporations who are entering the space and really decentralizing power from one institution and making it scalable, like a McDonald's for your brain.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think, like you said, I think there's a lot to be said for a skinned knee. And are we going to be putting Band-Aid out of business now because we're not out on the playground anymore, and I digress. And I know I'm a 50s kid, so I remember the playground really well, and it was a whole different world. I mean, we were in touch with one another. There was that humanness to everything, and I just hate to see it go away. I really hope that we fight hard to not lose that. And I think we're going down that path. I think we need to really do an about face and take a really good hard look at
I
being in
agree.
the same room. Of course that, the virus hasn't helped with that, but I really do hope that the virus, because we've been so extricated one from the other, is going to bring us back in full happiness, harmony, and joy, because we are going to be thrilled to be back in one another's company. That would be what I
I
would
love
hope
that.
for everyone. You've been known to talk about creating a new system. So what does that mean? What does it look like? And how do we do it?
So I've actually already invented a new system. It's just a matter of getting the money there. That's why representation counts sort of funds all of that. And what I mean by creating a new system is right now you can't really change things when the same old problem is trying to fix the problem, right? And again, I think a large part of why we have racism today is, racism and classism are two hand-in-hand issues. Classism invented racism in the sense that, whites could only go to school or to Harvard at one point, and blacks were segregated, right? Or people of color. And we know that to be very real and very recent in our history. So, and these systems have been set up to keep people segregated. And I think that what I really do mean about creating a new system is one of inclusion, one that's representative, one that has had a lot of people at the table to kind of invent this new wheel. And so what that looks like again is a future where education is going to be really true, valuable education is going to be accessible to anyone and everyone. And it's very, very much possible, like if people in villages can have Facebook on a smartphone, I mean, education's pretty possible. We just have to really strive for that and be very stubborn with our mission to be able to accomplish that just as sole individuals. And, I think our self-autonomy is what's going to lead that new system forward.
Hashtag just be good.
Yes,
Hashtag just
exactly.
be kind.
I love
Hashtag,
it.
give of yourself, whatever. Speaking of Harvard, I see that you're going to be speaking there at the Harvard Undergraduate Women in Business Intercollegiate Conference on the 7th. How exciting. I'm assuming that that's online, but still very exciting.
Yeah, it is. I'm pretty excited about that too. I'll be paneling a topic there. I don't know the topic yet, but I really do look forward to it because again, these are our future leaders, our future creme de creme. And like if they can go forward and, because like the International Business Convention, it includes all universities. So like if they can all go forward and try to strive for representation, there's no better other way.
Absolutely. Well, I gave my speech at Harvard about 6 years ago, and I was there in
Oh,
person,
love
which
it.
I
I'll
was
have to
thrilled
find it
about. It was,
later.
it was definitely on my bucket list, and that is,
Amazing.
and I
Good for
made that
you.
happen. I wanted to, I never was, I never went to college, so I'm not a college grad, but I went down another path, which was quite different, and I had all of my lovely, wins and successes and some losses, and I've learned through life. All the important, I think, some of the most important things, and that is, again, as I turn back and say, let's just be kind. you know, amazing. To one another. I don't want to sound like Ellen, but let's just be kind to one another. Shireen, it's been a real pleasure. Yeah, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Tell us how people, apart from the website, which is representationcounts.com, we can see it on the ticker at the bottom of the screen. How else might people find you?
So you can just find us on Instagram, LinkedIn, you know, the traditional social media. We're also on Clubhouse now. I know that that's a trendy thing.
I know.
So you can find me or the organization on there and hopefully somewhere near you, whether participations or institutions, organizations, whatever it is.
That's awesome. Any last words that you would want, any parting words that you would want for people to know, for people to hear?
So I guess in partnership with your be kind to or lead with kindness, I would say like also have open ears, like really be willing to hear people where they're at, their stories, as corny and as cheesy and easy as that sounds. Really just listen to people and just be good humans by trying to help each other. It goes so far.
It really does go so far. Thanks so much, young lady. I'm going to call you. Thanks so much, young lady, for being on my show.
It was great talking to you.
Thank you so much. You stay right there while I say goodbye to everybody and give them appointment for yet another extraordinary entrepreneur the next time around. You have been in the limelight with Clarissa and Shireen. Bye-bye, everybody. Thanks for listening to this episode of the In the Limelight podcast, intelligent media for the savvy entrepreneur. You can listen to this and all of my podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, and Inspired News Radio. You'll find all of my videos and the In the Limelight digital magazine on clarissabert.com. And don't forget to connect with me on social pretty much anywhere. Stay well until we meet again. In the Limelight.